Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery, and that is why the Machinery Digest exists, a no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello and welcome to Idle Chatter. Ray Bohax here, the hot rod farmer, and I'm recording this on our farm, on Catswamp Road in Hackettstown, New Jersey, the home of the M&M candy factory, in case I never told you that before. And you may be eating M&Ms this week because this is the Christmas week podcast. So this podcast will be launched during the week of Christmas. And I want to wish all of you that are listening a belated, of course it'll come up probably right after Christmas, belated Christmas, and hopefully you had a wonderful and a blessed Christmas and Christmas week between Christmas and New Year's, and there will be a podcast before the New Year also. But I did wanted to wish you a merry, 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 merry Christmas, and it's a wonderful time of year, with the birth of our Savior Jesus Christ, and hopefully that all of the hubbub and excitement of the Christmas holiday did not allow you to forget the reason for the season, as the saying goes. So today, we're going to have a little bit of a different podcast, and I've said that to you many, many times in the past, in the short history of Idle Chatter, but I want to try something new today. And what I'm going to be trying new is that I'm going to actually give you a different type of instructional instructional podcast. This is a precursor to me starting, hopefully, within the first quarter of 2019, the Hot Rod Farmer TV YouTube channel. And once I get that up and going, I am going to be doing short instructional and educational videos, one a week. So there'll be, God willing, a podcast every week, and then there'll be a video once a week on the Hot Rod Farmer TV YouTube channel. And they will probably be, those videos will probably be between 10 and 15 minutes. And I think that there is a real need for them in the agricultural industry. And I guess like Henry Ford used to say, we'll try it and see what happens. In case you didn't know that was Henry Ford's famous saying, somebody at the Ford Motor Company would come to him and say, Mr. Ford, I have an idea for this. And he would listen to it. And if he felt that it possibly had merit, he would say, let's try it and see what happens. And I think that's a lot of what happens in agriculture, right? We may try a different seed or a different foliar feeding product or a different fungicide or what have you, and we try it and we see what happens. So that's basically what I'm going to do. But what I am going to talk about today on this podcast, there it is, I dragged it out again, podcast, but I am going to talk about voltmeters. And since it's basically a simple subject to discuss, that I feel that I could get away with it by doing it with just audio and no visual. But I am going to make a suggestion to you. And what my suggestion is, that listen to this podcast, and then afterwards, doesn't have to be right afterwards, but in the near future, listen to it again while you have your voltmeter in front of you. Now, keep in mind that if you want to go get your voltmeter, all you have to do, wherever you're listening to this podcast on, be it my website, the Fran Network, Apple iTunes, or Ag Daily, is to hit the pause button and you could stop the podcast and then go get your voltmeter. But I really think that it would be the most effective for you to listen to this podcast without getting your voltmeter, and then listen to it again when you have your voltmeter in front of you, along with some things to check. And what I'm going to, as we go on today, I'm going to discuss that with you, but I'll give you the heads up right now. You're going to need your voltmeter, and most likely is going to be a digital voltmeter. You're going to need a battery. It could be a flashlight battery. You're going to need a bulb. It could be a bulb from, you know, a car, tractor, what have you, any type of bulb. I actually have a bulb right here that I'm going to check, and it is a 1157 bulb. Excuse me, 1156 single element, single filament. I would like for you to have some sort of switch, a fuse, and possibly a relay. And so those things I'm sure you could find in your farm shop, and if not, when you go to town, you could pick up or get it at a junk pile someplace. I just want to walk through some steps on how to check certain things. So that is what your homework is, to get those parts, to get those parts of those items, your voltmeter. And I would suggest listening to this podcast one time and don't have anything in front of you and just concentrate and take it all in. And then the second time, listen to it with your voltmeter in front of you, and then you could pause the podcast and then get to the next test procedure. And by the time you get done, you're going to be surprised that you're going to be pretty good with that voltometer. Alrighty? So that is what we are going to try to do today. And we will, hopefully it's successful, right? We'll try it and see what happens. Alrighty. Today's talk is a culmination of many things that I've discussed on my podcast, Idle Chatter, over the past number of episodes. I did a two-part podcast about the right to repair. I've done some other podcasts and mentioning some electrical things. But the whole core is that you need to be able to, on modern farm equipment and even older farm equipment, but it was a lot less forgiving because there's a lot less electronics on it, is that you, at times, you're going to need to confirm things with a meter. And the standard bearer is the volt ohm, and a better one is a volt ohm amp meter. And it gives you the ability to check those three different things. So what we're going to start out with, and I'm not going to try to make you an electrical engineer, I'm going to give you practical meter knowledge here. So it would be like, you know, a while back, and I even mentioned this a few years ago, I went to the Ag PhD, the Hefty brothers are friends of mine, and I went to the Ag, the first class I ever took of theirs was the winter workshop, the Ag PhD Soils Clinic. And, you know, I did not expect to become an agronomist by going to a 4 or 5 or 6 hour class, but what they basically did was give you agronomy 101 for the farmer. So that you could look at a soil test, you could look at things, and you could have a basic understanding of it. And that's what I'm going to give you here. Because what I have found over the years, be it in the automotive industry, or be it in the farm machinery segment, is that most mechanics, most farmers have a voltometer in their toolbox, but they really are not familiar with using it. And if they are if they do use it, they're awkward with it, and they don't have a level of confidence in making it, doing a test and feeling that the results are valid. So they don't have a level of confidence about that. And hopefully at the end of you listening to this podcast twice, that you will have a great deal of confidence in using that meter and going and testing something and determining what's going on and not being a parts replacer, right? Just throwing parts at it. We discussed that in last week's podcast about differential diagnosis. And if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, please listen to it. I think that you'll enjoy it. Well, first of all, let's discuss in simple terms volts, amps, and ohms. Voltage is what could be considered electrical pressure. So that's the pressure behind the pressure that's causing the electrons to flow through the wire. So voltage could be considered electrical pressure. Often it's made an analogy to water going through a pipe. The pressure, the line pressure or the hydraulic pressure of the water. And then amperage is the flow of electrons. So basically, in essence, the volts and the amps work together. So voltage is electrical pressure, and amperage can be considered the flow of electrons through that circuit. And the electrons are what actually does the work in that circuit, and the voltage pushes those electrons through that wire. So it'd be like a pump pushing water through a pipe, an irrigation system, or a hose, or a hydraulic system. And then we also have ohms. And ohms was actually a man's name. And ohms is basically the opposition to electron flow or resistance. So in essence, if you have a garden hose, and you have a garden hose, and we'll make a very simple analogy here. You have a garden hose, and coming out of your well, you have 50 pounds of pressure. So the 50 pounds of pressure going into that garden hose is your voltage. So you could say you have 50 volts. And then if you are flowing, let's say 10 gallons a minute, I'm making up numbers as I go along, so you have 50 volts, and you have 10 gallons per minute coming out. The 10 gallons per minute is the amperage. That's the flow of the water, the flow of the electrons. And then if you were to take the hose and put a nozzle on the end of it and close off the nozzle, that would be the restriction, and that would be the ohms. So based upon how small you make that orifice, all right, in that hose, would be considered the size of the resistor, and a resistor in electronics or electricity is measured in the scale of ohms. So ohms is opposition to current flow, and we have the volts is the pressure, and the amperage is the flow of the electrons. And that's one thing if you don't feel comfortable with this at this particular point, you know, you're not alone. Because other than if you had arcing wires or lightning striking someplace, you're not going to see electricity. The only way that you could see electricity go through a circuit is with something called an oscilloscope, and you're not actually seeing it, it's drawing a picture of it. But if you just remember the garden hose theory, that the pressure coming out of the well pump is the voltage, the amount of gallons per minute, gallons per hour, whatever the metric is that you're using, is the amperage, and any restriction that you have to that flow is a resistance, and that resistance is measured in ohms, OHMS. So basically, in essence, on a vehicle or a piece of farm equipment, for all intents and purposes, we're either going to check voltage, amperage, or resistance, ohms. So it's going to be one of those three things. And that's why most meters are volt, ohm, amp meters. And the meter that I have in front of me is a cheapie from town. It's a $20 meter from the auto parts store, $25 digital meter that I leave in my toolbox. And this particular one does not read amperage, so I have to get a different meter to read amperage. But the one I'm using today that I'm going to be talking about is basically a volt ohm meter, and I'm sure that you will have a volt ohm amp meter. So now let's discuss the meter, because I'm going to be bouncing back and forth between these areas, because as we come together, I'm going to ask you just to stay with me on this, because I am going to appear to be bouncing around, but you'll see if you follow on the journey and are open-minded, you'll see that it all makes sense at the end. Now, there's two types of meter scales. There's what's called an analog meter, which most people don't have anymore. You can still buy them. They're excellent. And an analog meter means that it has a needle and a scale. So like a speedometer in a car, that's an analog meter. And most people today use a digital meter. and a digital meter has a digital display. It doesn't have any needle. It puts up numbers. And the abbreviation for a digital meter is DVOM, which stands for Digital Volt Ohm Meter. And if you have an analog meter in your shop, that's excellent. And if you have a digital, that's excellent also. What has happened is that on most computerized circuits on modern equipment and vehicles is that they say that you need to use a digital meter because the meter needs to have a certain internal resistance when you if you happen to be checking some of those computer circuits on the machine or on the vehicle. And what they say is that it needs to have a 10 meg ohm internal resistance. That's a 10 milli ohm internal resistance. Don't worry about that right now, because every digital volt ohm meter that you buy today will have a 10 meg ohm internal resistance. So that's common. 20 years ago it was not. But when I studied electrical engineering in college, there really wasn't digital meters. There were digital meters, but they weren't widely accepted, and they taught you on an analog meter. And the industry standard was a Simpson 260. That's the Cadillac, the Lincoln, whatever you want to call it, of analog meters, the Simpson company. I don't know if they're any longer in business. But actually, I do have an old Simpson 260, which is probably older than I am, but it works great. But what's nice about a analog meter is that you could actually see the needle move, whereas a digital meter, lots of times when it's settling in on its reading, the numbers are bouncing around. And there are some instances when you would want to actually see the sweeps of the meter, but that's for a different podcast. I'm going to just confuse you here. Alrighty, so now you could have a digital or you could have an analog, and all we're going to discuss today is a DVOM, a digital volt ohm meter, and hopefully you have one that also reads amperage. Now, once you get into the family of DVOM, there are two types of meters. There is one that is scalable and one that is what they call auto-scaling or auto-ranging. The meter that I have in front of me is a scalable meter. And what that means is that it's going to have different numbers on it and different scales. For instance, under the ohm scale, it's going to have 200, 2,000, 20,000, 200,000, and 2 million ohms. So those are the scales or the ranges, and it has the same thing for voltage, and it has for AC voltage and for DC voltage. Now, if you look at your meter, you'll see, most of this is 99% of this is industry standard as far as the scaling is concerned, so you don't have to really worry about it. It's like an SAE standard, so it's an industry standard. That if you were to see the letter V with a little one squiggly line over the top of it, that's volts AC. And if you see the letter V with a broken line over it and then a solid line above it, so it looks almost like a highway line, one side passing, not on side, the other side not passing. So it's got a solid line on top, a broken line underneath, and then the letter V. That's volts DC. So the one squiggly line over the V scale is volts AC. These two lines, a solid and a broken one, is volts DC. If you were to check line voltage in your shop or in your house or what have you, that would be AC. So building voltage is AC, alternating current, whereas most equipment runs off of DC voltage. There are rare exceptions. You may have some, let's say, like earlier Ford Power Strokes, or maybe even some later ones, well, probably not the later ones, but the earlier Ford Power Strokes that actually ran the injectors off of AC, but the shop manual would tell you that. So it's very important that you understand those two settings, because if you're going to be checking something in your farm shop, how much voltage is it coming in from the utility into your building, and you're going to go into the socket and check it, that would be, the meter would have to be set on AC. And if you go, and if you're going to check the battery in your combine to see how much voltage is in it, then you would have to move that to DC. So there's AC and DC. And then you would have the ohm scale on this particular meter, and then on a better meter, which I should have brought in, but the battery was dead on it, a better meter will have amperage also. So on a vehicle, 99% of your testing, if not 100%, will be with the DC scale, not the AC scale. Now, what people get confused with, and it's very easy to get confused with this, and I personally like a scalable meter. And what a scalable meter means is that I'm going to be able to select the range of whatever I'm checking. So, for instance, let's look at our volts DC circuit side of the meter. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 positions on this meter. And this is for volts DC. So I have 600 volts, 200 volts, 20 volts, and then I have 2,000 millivolts, and then 200 millivolts. Now, milli being thousandth of a volt, you would use that if you were checking, let's say, possibly an output on some sensors on a piece of equipment on an engine, for instance, like an oxygen sensor or an NOx sensor. So we're not going to, we'll go over that briefly, but that's not for today's lesson. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with the 20 volt, the 200 volt, and the 600 volt. And then if I go to the AC side of the meter, I have on AC, I have 200 volts and 500 volt scales. And then if I go to the ohm side, I have 200 ohms, 2,000 ohms, 20,000 ohms, 200,000 ohms, and 2 million ohms, which I had said a few minutes ago. This is where people get confused. And what that basically is, consider that the resolution of the meter. Now, that's a fancy word for saying that's the maximum the meter could read on that scale. So let's talk about a sprayer on the farm. And let's say that you are going to, you have a sprayer, and you're going to obviously have a pressure gauge on it. So you have a pressure gauge that, let's say, goes between 0 and 100 pounds of pressure. So that is the range of that gauge. It could read between 0 and 100 pounds. So if you were to read 50 pounds, if the system had 50 pounds of pressure in it, you would be somewhere in the middle, right? Because it's a half of its resolution. Now, if the system had 120 pounds in it, you could not read that because it would bury the gauge needle all the way over to the right, up against the stop, and you could only accurately read up to 100 pounds. Conversely, let's say the system only had a half a pound of pressure in it. Then a gauge from 0 to 100 would not have what they call resolution, enough resolution at low pressure for it to read accurately or even move the needle. Another way of thinking about this is that as a farmer, we often have a number of different tire pressure gauges. We'll have one that reads between 0 and 10 pounds. We'll have one that reads between 0 and 60 pounds. We may have one that reads between 0 and 100 pounds. And the reason for it being is that you would need to have a gauge that is scaled in more minute graduations if you're trying to read a tire that's only supposed to have 8 pounds of pressure in it. If you were to use a 0 to 100 pound apply a pressure gauge, it would not move it accurately enough for you to tell how much pressure is in. And like I say, conversely, using the same example as with the sprayer, is that if the tire had 100 pounds of pressure in and you had a 0 to 60 pounds, all you would just pin the gauge and it would be useless after that. So in essence, that's all these ranges are. So on a, let's say, I'm looking at my meter right now, that on the volts DC, if I go to a 20 volt scale, then the maximum that that meter could read on that scale is 20 volts. So if I were checking a battery in my pickup truck, I would want to use the 20 volt scale. And why do you want to use that scale? Because you know that the battery has about 12 volts in it, and when a charging circuit is running, it's 14.6, 14.7 volts. So the thing is that you want to use as much of that scale as possible to get the highest amount of resolution so that you could accurately read the voltage. And this is going to be a very simple test for you to do to teach this to yourself. You could take, let's say, a flashlight battery, a 1.5 volt flashlight battery, and you could put the your meter on its lowest scale, and you could read 1.5 volts. So let's say at a 20 volt scale, we could read 1.5 volts. If you brought that up to the 600 volt scale, you may see that it says that there's no voltage in that battery because there is not enough resolution to read lower inputs. And that's very important. And that's really one of the major stumbling blocks that messes up people, because they don't know what scale to put their meter on. And when you go to school and study electronics, they will tell you when you're checking an unknown circuit, then what you need to do, and this is for volts, ohms, or amps, is you start on the highest scale the meter has, and then you keep ratcheting it down until you get the most accurate reading. So, and you could do this yourself. It's very easy. But the rule of thumb is always start on the highest scale and ratchet it down. Now, if you are over range, so let's say that you're on a 20 volt scale and you're trying to check 100 volts, using simple numbers, depending upon the design of your meter, it may show OR over range. This particular meter just shows a 1 with a dot next to it, and saying that it's over range. So depending upon your meter style, look in your owner's manual. And you know, I should break away for a minute and say the first place to start also is to familiarize yourself with the equipment through the owner's manual, and then listen to this podcast and listen to it again and do the different tests. So it'll give you some sort of over range scaling. But the thing is that you start on the highest scale and you keep clicking the meter down to the lowest scale, and then if you go too low, it'll read 0, and then if you come back up, you'll get your accurate reading. And that's for volts, ohms, and amps. Always start on the highest scale and then work yourself down. All right, now, that is a rangeable meter. And as I said, there are what they call auto-ranging meters, where you have to make none of those decisions as far as the scale is concerned. You just have to decide whether you're reading voltage, amperage, or resistance ohms. Now, a lot of people like an auto-ranging meter, and I like it to a certain extent, because what it does is it allows you to not be concerned with the scale, but it makes you less intimate with checking the circuit. And it'll find the scale for itself for the highest resolution. They're very, very good. They're excellent tools, but they're not good to teach someone on, for the simple reason being is they're not understanding the scaling of the meter, because it's doing it automatically. And you won't see that this much in what you're doing in the farm shop, but if you're working on later equipment, let's say a Tier 4 engine or advanced electronics, is that I like to be able to know what scale I'm on, and it will show you the scale, but some meters are not as intuitive as others. So you need to be familiar with that meter, and what you may want to do is if you have an auto-ranging meter, go to town and buy a cheap digital voltmeter like this for $20, which is a rangeable one, and then get a light bulb, get a resistor, get a switch, get something, and play with it on the table in the farm shop and the workbench, and then, you know, say, okay, I'm going to go with my manual ranging meter and say, okay, this light bulb has 1.3 ohms of resistance, and then now I'm going to see how the auto ranging meter scales that, and then you'll get to learn. And once, you know, it's like anything in life, once you get familiar with the tool, it's not a problem. The thing is that what most people do is they invest, the tool guy comes or somebody buys them a digital voltmeter, and matter of fact, that was even one of the things I had in my Christmas podcast, is a Fluke digital voltmeter. And the thing is that, and they buy that, and you know, it's like a piece of exercise equipment. It's real easy to buy, it's not easy to use. And the people buy it, and they think, oh, this is great, and they flip around with the knobs, and they think they got the cat's meow here, and they do, but they never make the investment in the time to learn how to use the meter. And there's probably nothing worse than having a tool, a diagnostic tool, whether it's a meter, whether it's an oscilloscope, whether it's anything that's diagnostic, right, a sonar, a leak down test, a compression tester, whatever it may be, that you don't know how to use. And like I say, it's easy to buy, but it requires that was the easy part. The investment is that you need to play with it. And as I said a few minutes ago, is that if you learn how to use your meter, then it's once you learn it, it's like riding a bicycle. You're not going to forget, and you'll be able to follow a diagnostic routine and go from there. So, in essence, my advice to you is that if you have an auto-ranging meter, that's wonderful. And if you don't, that's wonderful. And if you have the auto-ranging, invest in a manual scaling meter and then learn how to use both of them. And then you'll become, it'll be a great $20, $25 investment. They're very, very inexpensive today. All right, so we have that. Now, a couple of other things that we will discuss is that the meter is going to have two leads. The red lead goes into the positive, and then the black lead would be either considered the common or the ground. So if you have those leads reversed, it's not going to make any difference with the color, but you need to be able to put it on the right terminals of whatever you're testing. So red goes to positive, and obviously black goes to what's called the ground or common. Now, inside the meter, you're going to have a battery. And depending upon the meter design, it's most likely a 9-volt battery. And that battery serves two purposes. Number one, it powers up the meter, so its internal circuitry works. And the second thing is that it's used for an ohms test, a resistance test. Now, the way an ohm meter works is that it sends a minute current, electron flow, from that internal meter battery, and it sends it through that part. And it knows, in simplistic terms, it knows what it sent out, and then on the other lead, it measures what it gets back, and it's able to calculate the resistance, which is the opposition to a current flow to electron flow. Alrighty, so the battery is very important because not only does it power the meter, it's used during an ohms test, a resistance test. So now, a couple of things that I want to touch on as we go through this. We're going to discuss a resistance test or an ohms test first. And for you to check resistance of anything in the circuit has to be unpowered, so it has to be shut off. So it doesn't have to be separated from the vehicle or the piece of equipment, but the power to it has to be off. Because, and if you don't, if you have it powered and you send that voltage through the ohm meter, you can end up blowing the meter. Most better meters have an inline fuse that you usually have to take the back of it off, and there's a little bus style glass fuse in there, that in case you accidentally do that or overload the meter or put voltage through it when it's on a resistance scale, it'll pop that fuse. So keep that in mind. If someone did that and the meter doesn't work, look in your owner's manual, because it's very possibly that there is a fuse in there I guess almost every meter has an internal fuse, and you would usually take the back of it off and you could pop the fuse out. It may be a little bit hard to find because it's a very short little fuse. So ohmmeter circuit needs to be unpowered, and also there is no polarity with a ohmmeter. So it makes no difference whether you hook the red lead on one side or the black lead on the other. With an ohmmeter, there is no polarity. With a voltage and an amperage meter, you do have to be cognizant of polarity, and we'll get there in a minute or two. But so two things. Number one, to check resistance of a circuit, the circuit has to be unpowered. And the second thing, it makes no difference whether you have the red lead to the left side of this terminal, that terminal, or the black lead there. There is no polarity. Two things, all right? So we're going to recap that at the end. Now, when would you want to check the resistance of something? Well, the resistance test is basically a continuity test. So let's say that you have a light bulb, and you don't know whether this light bulb is good. And I have one right here, this 1156 bulb. Is it 1156? I told you it was. 1156. Alrighty? So that's like a light bulb for a tail light, but it's a single filament. It's not, doesn't have a stoplight in it. Alright? A stoplight element in it. So a ohms test is a continuity test. Now, keep in mind that a lot of meters have what's called an audible continuity test. And sometimes people call it ringing out the circuit or ringing out the wire. So you don't have to look at the meter, and you could touch, let's say if you have a piece of wire, you touch the meter to one side, you have it on the audible test, and the meter to the other side, and if it beeps or rings or whatever sound it makes, then you have continuity. And that's great. That's great for certain things. So if you want to check a piece of wire and you see if it has continuity, let's say you're working on a combine and you want to go from the engine into the cab, and you have long enough leads and you're one person, you can't read the meter, you can put it on the audible continuity test, and you hear you touch it, beep, and then you know that there's continuity in that wire. You know that there's continuity, but you do not know how much resistance is in that wire. You just know that it has the ability to flow some electricity. So now, there are times when you need to actually identify the resistance. So now, let's say we're getting back to our bulb. Since we're doing an ohmmeter test here, we're going to have the circuit unpowered, and it's an ohmmeter. We're going to check continuity in this filament to see if this bulb is good. And there's no polarity, so on the case of the bulb, I am going to put, in this particular instance, I happen to have the black lead. And then I'm going to go to the center terminal of the bulb with the red lead, but you could reverse it, it makes no difference, no continuity. And this bulb I have the lowest scale, which is 200 ohms, and I have 2.4 ohms of resistance. So this bulb, 1156 bulb, has 2.4 ohms of resistance through the filament. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump up to the 2000 ohm scale, just as a tutorial here for you, and if I read it in the 2000 ohm scale, now it's showing 0.1 ohms. So that's 0.1 of 2000, maximum resolution 2000 ohms. If I go to the 20,000 ohm scale, it shows zero. So what I'm explaining to you is you start at the high scale, you go down to you keep clicking down and scaling down, and then when I get to the lowest scale, it's only 2 ohms, I'm using the most resolution, which is going to be the most accurate. Thinking of a sprayer, you're trying to read 3 pounds of pressure in the sprayer line, and the gauge goes up to 500 pounds, is that you're not getting an accurate reading. So it is that simple how to check a bulb. So it's very important for you to do that, because sometimes you could look at the bulb in something and you think that it's good, and it may not be. And that happens oftentimes with fuses. you could look at a fuse and you think that the fuse is good, and it's not. So you would use your own meter to check that. So now I'm going to check a bus type fuse here, and this is a 10 amp fuse. It makes no difference for the ohm meter. And I'm just going to take the meter on my lowest scale, 200 ohms, and I'm going to go across this fuse, and I have 1 ohm of resistance. So this fuse has 1 ohm of resistance, and I know that this fuse is good. And what you may want to do also is when you have the meter on it, tilt the fuse back and forth, because I've had instances where if you held it one way, it made a connection, and if you held it the other way, it didn't, and you were not able to see that. So that is one thing we can check with ohms. Next thing here is I have a switch. You can hear it clicking. I have a rocker switch, all right? So I'm going to check to see whether this switch is good. And I'm going to take my ohm meter. I'm going to go on, in this particular instance, I'm going on my lowest scale, and 200 ohms. And I have the switch closed, and this switch has 22.8 ohms of resistance. Now, if you hear, I'm going to click it. I'm going to put it by the microphone. Maybe you heard it. I clicked it, and now I have infinity. I have 1, and I have, on my meter, the way it's overranged, meaning infinity, it is open. Infinity is an open scale. So on when the switch is off, it's open. When the switch is closed, continuity, I have 23 ohms, 23, 22.9, depending upon how tightly I am holding this leads on here. 22.9 is what it's settled in at. Alrighty? So you want to check a switch. Very, very simple. The switch needs to be unpowered, does not need to be out of the piece of equipment. You need to gain access to it. You could unplug it, go with the ohm meter. There's no continuity. Either terminal, color wire goes on each one. Put the switch on, put the switch off, and you basically have, you know whether that switch is good. You're not guessing. So now let's say you have something, you have lights on your combine that don't work. So now we went with the ohm meter, we checked the bulb, we see that the bulb is not open, it has continuity, but we know with this particular instance, we'll say this bulb that I have here, it had, let me check it again, I think it had, let's see, 2 seconds, I'll check it. It has 2.7 ohms, 2.6 ohms of resistance. We checked our fuse. We know our fuse is good. It had, 1.7 ohms of resistance. We checked our switch. We knew our switch was good because we had continuity when we had some resistance in the switch when it was open, when it was closed, and we had infinity when it was open. This particular switch had 22 ohms in it, and the reason why it did is because it's a lighted switch, and it was going through the filament of the light. So that is why it read higher. Most switches won't have any resistance or 1 or 2 ohms of resistance. But what you're looking for is continuity and completely open. So you know that the switch is good. So now what we need to do is we need to check whether we're getting power to that switch. So what we're going to do is we're going to change from the ohm scale to the voltage scale. And we know because it's a combine, right, it's working on 12-volt battery. So we don't have to start scaling down, start the highest scale, because we know that the battery is a 12-volt battery, automotive-style charging circuit, 14 volts. So we're going to go over to volts DC. And we're going to go to the 20-volt scale on my particular meter. Maximum reading is 20 volts, like a speedometer. Let's say the speedometer only goes up to 100 miles an hour in the truck. Then that's the maximum range that it could read to. And what we're going to do now is we're going to turn the power on to that circuit. And what's going to happen is that now we need to be cognizant of the continuity. So the red lead from the voltmeter is going to go to the power source, and the black lead is going to go to a ground. So let's say you're on the combine, and now we're going to go, we have the bulb out, and we're going to check to see whether we have power going to the bulb. Now, when you're diagnosing an electrical circuit, always start with the easiest area first. I mean, so there's no use ripping the dashboard apart to try to get to the switch to see if you have power. Go to where the bulb socket is first and work yourself backwards. Think of it like a garden hose, right? If you have no water coming out the end, you walk backwards towards the spigot to see where the problem is. You don't start ripping the pump out of the well and see whether you have water pressure there. You go backwards from the end of the run. So now we go to the socket on the, we take the bulb out of the socket, we know that the bulb is good, so now we're wondering whether we have power coming to it. So if we have power coming to it, so what we're going to do is that we're going to take the bulb out, we're going to turn the lights on, and with our voltmeter on the DC 20 volt scale, we're going to take the red lead and we're going to touch it to the power source of the in the socket, and then we're going to take the black lead and we're going to go to ground. If you accidentally reverse those leads, you're not going to hurt anything, but what you will do is you will get a minus sign up on the scale. And so say minus 12.2 volts or 12 volts, 11.9, instead of no minus scale. So then again, it's not the end of the world, but you do want to read it accurately. So now you're going to go and while you're going with the red lead to the power wire coming into that electrical socket, is that at this particular point, because it's a DC circuit, it needs voltage and ground. And by going with the lead, with the voltmeter lead to the power and running it, touching it to metal someplace in external ground, is that we're confirming that we have power. So now we go and we see that we have 12 volts that way. So we know our bulb is good, we have a switch is good, and we have 12 volts there. The only thing that's in question would be, is the ground circuit good? All right? So now you would keep your red lead from the voltmeter onto the power side of the electrical socket that holds the bulb, and you would take your black lead that is not on, take it away from the external ground and touch it to the other terminal inside the electrical socket, which would be the natural ground circuit of that light. And so what we're doing now is we confirmed we have power, and now we're going and we're actually checking to see whether the ground path is there. So now if you don't have any voltage or you have very low voltage there, then you know that the ground path for that circuit is defective or faulty or broken. If you have the same voltage, the 12.5 volts, 14 volts, whatever, have if the machine is running or not, that you have with the external ground, then you know that you have a connection problem in that socket for the bulb. And how do we know that? Very simple, through deduction. Last week's podcast, right? Differential diagnosis. We have voltage. We have voltage independent of the ground circuit, and we have voltage with the ground circuit. We know that the bulb is good because we checked the resistance of it with the ohm meter, and so we know that when that bulb goes into that socket, it's not making a good connection. And I had a problem like that just recently. My electric garage door opener in the house here, and on the farm, and the garage door opener would work. I would hear the relay click for the light, but the light wouldn't work, and there was a problem in the socket. It had voltage coming to it, but the other pin was bent down over years from screwing the bulb in. It's Chinese metal or something, it bent. But anyway, so that is a simple test. Now, so a voltmeter will be most of the time in the circuit that you're going to be testing is going to be in parallel. So if you want to check the battery on your tractor, your truck, you would go across the two terminals of the battery and read the voltage. If you wanted to check whether the alternator was charging, what you would do is you'd go across red to positive, black to negative, DC voltage. We know that it's a 12-volt battery, so we automatically go to the 20-volt scale, not the 2,000-volt scale, and most resolution, and we start the engine up, and we say, okay, with the engine off, we have 12.2 volts. With the engine running, we have 12.4 volts, 12.5 volts. We know that the alternator is not charging. We have 14.6 volts with the engine running. We know that the alternator is charging. So in most instances, a voltmeter is going to be connected in parallel. So it'll be like hooking up jumper cables across the two terminals that are being checked. Now, an amp meter is going to be put in series. That means you're going to break the circuit and you're going to put one end of the meter into the one end of the circuit and the other end of the meter into the other end of the wire, and the load is going to be pulled through it. Let me stop there. Basically, in essence, most better meters today, as far as amperage is concerned, will have an inductive clamp. So unless you're doing very minute circuit voltage or something like on a computer circuit, so if you wanted to take a charging circuit or an alternator or a starter circuit, or let's say you have electric meters on a planter, and you'd be able to just clip around with the inductive clamp. So when you look to buy a meter, a digital voltmeter, it probably, they're more expensive, but with the inductive clamp, all you need to do is clip around the wire, and it's going to read the magnetic EMF, the magnetic force of the electrons flowing through that wire, and it's a very simple, easy way for you to do that. But in the instances that you are not able to use an inductive clamp, and you have to put the meter in, the meter needs to be in series. And what series means, it needs to be part of the circuit. Alrighty? So let's recap here that we have the ohm meter. There is no polarity. It makes no difference what side you go with the wires. All right, the circuit has to be shut off and it cannot be powered up, and you're going to read resistance in that circuit, which is opposition to current flow. If you have zero resistance, then that circuit is considered to be shorted, based upon if it's just a piece of wire. Obviously, it's not shorted to ground. But if it has over range, then it's infinity, and that means that it is open. Alrighty? So if you're checking a bulb and a bulb has zero resistance, then that bulb element is shorted to the case. And if it's so, a bulb needs to have some resistance across its filament. If it has infinity or open, that means that that bulb is broken internally. Voltmeter on a vehicle, for 99% of the applications, we're going to be using the DC scale, all right? The voltmeter, and the voltmeter is going to be, in most instances, installed in parallel across the terminals. And, you know, play with this. You know, check a 1.5 volt flashlight battery. Check the charging voltage on across your battery of your car, your truck, combine, what have you. Very, very simple. Amp meter, which is current flow, it's the how many gallons per minute, or gallons per hour, or gallons per second that are coming out of that garden hose. And that is going to be put in series unless it has an inductive clamp. So I'm going to recap to a little bit greater extent right now. Very, very simple tests. So if you want to check for power, you're going to use the voltmeter. If you want to check for continuity in any type of circuit, you're going to use the ohm meter, and the circuit is going to need to be unpowered. And if you want to check for an excessive amount of power being consumed, let's say that you have to go back to the planter drive meter. Let's say you have a 10-row planter. And you went with your, and you ran in your farm shop, and you ran the meters, and you had an inductive clamp, and you read the current draw, how much amperage each motor for each meter is drawing. It'll give you an indication of the power consumption. So, let's say that you have a meter, a seed meter, that something is jammed in it or the bearing is going bad. When you were to check the current draw, then you would say, oh, geez, and I'm making up a number here. Let's say all of the other meters are 1 amp. And then you went to this one on row 10 of your 10-row planter, and this one is 2 amps, then you know that that is drawing excessive current. Why is it drawing excessive current? Well, it could be because the actual drive motor is starting to go bad, or whatever that motor is driving could be binding. amps. All right, so that's very, very important. So and the amperage is going to tell you what is happening. So as a circuit starts to have excessive, I don't want to use the word resistance, let's say excessive mechanical resistance, all right, so you're trying to turn something, you're trying to, the starter motor is trying to turn the crankshaft and the motor is seizing, it's going to draw more current. And another quick test that I want to go over for you, which is very simple, and you could use the voltmeter for this, or you could actually use a test light. And let's say you have a piece of equipment and the battery goes dead on you. You leave it for a week or so, the battery goes dead. Very simple to do a draw test. What you do is you disconnect the negative terminal on the battery, and you could take a test light, and you could put it in series, so one end of the test light to the negative terminal on the battery, the other end to the cable, and if the light lights up, then there is a draw. Now, what you would do then is go around and start to pull fuses out to see what makes the light go out. So, let's say you go and you pull the fuse to the stoplights, arguably, whatever. All right, I'm making stuff up here. And the light goes out, the test light goes out, then you know that the stoplight circuit is what's killing the battery. Now keep in mind that when you start to go on advanced electronics, on more modern equipment, the test light is a down and dirty test, because all of these computers on your combine, your tractor, your pickup truck, your wife's car, they all have what they call a KAM, keep alive memory, and that is always drawing a minute amount of current, amperage from the battery to keep that computer memory alive, or the time in the digital clock on the vehicle, or the radio preset stations. So what you really need to do is use your ammeter for that. And what you would do is this particular instance, you wouldn't use the inductive clamp. You would break the circuit, as I said, disconnect the battery ground cable, and use the leads from your ammeter and you will read how the amperage draw. Any type of memory in a computer circuit, whatever, is going to be a milliamp, which is a thousandth of an amp. So if it's 5 milliamps is your draw, that's 5 one-thousandths of an amp, and that is not going to kill the battery. If you're at a half an amp or 1 amp, then you would go around and do the same thing and start to pull fuse. I had a gentleman contact me through the Farm Machinery Digest. He has an older tractor, and the battery's going dead, and usually when you have an older piece of equipment, if there's not many fuses to pull out because there's not much electronics, disconnect the field circuit, not the from the alternator, not the wire that goes to the battery to charge it, but the two thin wires, and usually if you have a draw like that, then you'll see that the light goes out, and you have a bad diode in the alternator. So basically, in essence, I'm going to ask you to listen to this again, get your meter, play with it. You could stop and start this podcast as many times as you like. You may want to just familiarize yourself with the meter, stop it, come back another day, listen again, what have you. Get yourself a light bulb, a fuse, maybe a switch, a relay or something, and then you could go and you could check everything and you could play with your meter, and it's going to, believe me, like I say, you spend an hour with this, you're going to have a PhD in it. Trust me, it's not complicated. Listen to the podcast, apply it. Listen to the podcast again, apply it, and come back. And if you have to check something, listen to this podcast. It's warehoused on my website, and it's also warehoused on Apple iTunes, the Fran Network, and also Ag Daily. Ready? So listen, we didn't have a special delivery segment today because I went too long on this. I get excited about it. But so this whole entire episode of Idle Chatter was brought to you by Firestone Ag. And as you know, that they're a company founded by Harvey Firestone, who is a fourth generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. Harvey always dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is the core of Firestone Ag today, and lives on with their 23-degree tread bar and AD2 technology. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. So, hey, thank Firestone for bringing you this segment today, and I greatly appreciate it. And also, if anyone is going to Commodity Classic, The past 2 years I've been at Commodity Classic and spoke on the main stage, but this year I'm taking it easy, and I'm going to be at the Firestone Ag booth, and I'm going to be hanging out there. So come over and see me, and we'll talk. We'll talk farm equipment. We'll talk crops. We'll talk engines, hot rods, voltmeters, whatever you want. So I'll be saying that every week now on the podcast between now and when Commodity Classic comes up at the end of February into the first day or two of, April, of March. So listen, you have a blessed, blessed Christmas, and I will talk to you before the new year, and know that the hot rod farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved America. Have a blessed day. Take care. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.